Hi, my name is Wendy, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. We just had this little thing going on up here. I brought my own Kleenex. I will warn you, I'm a crier. And I had it here, and pretty soon it just moved its way over to this side of the table. And I leaned over and I said, oh my God, my tissues are on that side, and I'm going to need them. So there was a lot of conversation going on up here, so I have my tissues, so I'm going to be okay. First, I would like to say how grateful I am to be amongst you this morning. As I look out, I'm so fortunate. I'm so fortunate to be in the room with you and to have found my place. I identified so deeply with you when I walked in the rooms of Al-Anon. It was humbling. This is humbling to be up here. I want to say thank you to Diane. We had many phone conversations, and thank you for being by my side. Thank you to Val for asking me to speak today. It's an honor and a privilege to be here to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you to my wonderful sponsor, Debbie Lance. I love you, I love you, I love you. And thank you to all my sponsees and my girls, and all of you have been praying for me this weekend to share. When I got here, I was very, very, very broken. And you taught me to show up. You taught me to put my big girl pants on, to put my shoulders back, to dry my tears, and to get on with the business of living. That this disease was not gonna hold me down. You see, I was not brought up in a family of alcoholism. I had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful father who was 6'6 and 375 pounds. He was a very big man. He was larger than life. He was a police officer. He was a deputy sheriff. And he was my protector and my provider. And he adored me. I was the youngest of four. My mother was one of 13. She came from Minnesota. And she had a vivacious love for cooking. And she handed it down to us all, me and my siblings. She could whip anything up in that kitchen. We learned how to can jelly and jam. We learned how to cook. She taught me that the way to a man's heart was through his stomach. And my husband will share with you that that's one of the reasons he married me, was because I was a fabulous cook. So as I was growing up in that household, it was made very clear to me that the rules were: you grow up, you fall in love, you get married, and then you have children. And that's the way we did things. My parents were a praying family. We grew up in church. We prayed at breakfast. We had meals together. We cooked together. We laughed together. We went on trips to the desert. When it would rain like this, there would be flowers all throughout the desert. And my parents would plan picnics, and we would go, the six of us, off to the desert to see the flowers. I have fond memories of my family being together. It's interesting to me that I wound up falling in love with an alcoholic, and not just one. My story will tell you. So when I was 14 years old, my brother, who was 11 years my senior, was coming down from Big Bear, and he was on a motorcycle, and he had been up at Oktoberfest, and he had been drinking. And he was injured in a motorcycle accident. He was thrown headfirst into a tree, and the helmet broke his neck. And he was paralyzed from the neck down. He was a C4, C5 quadriplegic for the rest of his 26 years that he got to be on this earth. And he was my big brother. He was my best friend. He was not an alcoholic. But he had made a decision that day to drink and drive. And that decision affected the rest of his life. It affected the rest of our lives as a family. My parents had taught us that when things got tough, we dug in. And as a family, we dug in, and we took care of my brother. I lived with him for several years and took care of him and loved on him and was at his bedside the day he took his last breath, and I adored him very deeply. At 17, I married for the first time. My high school sweetheart, I graduated, and in August, we were married. My mom had to sign for me to get married, and I was off and living my life with a man that I didn't really know. He had come from an alcoholic family. And pretty soon it became obvious that drinking and drugs were his thing. And we had a very tumultuous relationship. There was a lot of abuse that went on. And it became clear to me that I needed to leave that marriage. And I didn't want to tell my parents. I didn't want to tell my family because I was ashamed. I was ashamed at the decision I'd made to marry him. I was ashamed that I was going to be the first one in my family to be divorced. But it's exactly what I needed to do. And so I left that marriage. And not too long after, another him came along. And I was in that relationship for about 2 years, and out of that relationship came a child, which was, again, not what was supposed to have been done. I was pregnant. I gave birth to a wonderful little girl, the love of my life, my daughter, Alyssa. And the two of us set off on life. I left that relationship. And again, not too long after, another him came along. Well, I had moved home with my parents to go to college and to get on with the business of life. And the next man came along, and this one, mind you, he was Mr. Smooth. He filled my proverbial cup, that longing that I had inside to be filled. I will give you a little example. We were driving down the freeway, and I had just gotten off work, and we were going up to my place in Rancho. And we got off the freeway, and he was right in front of me in his truck, and I was in my little red BMW. In the middle of traffic, he gets out with 24 long stem red roses, walks up to my car door, and proceeds to hand them to me, embrace me, and everybody around's honking, honk, 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 you know? They think that this is some great love story, which it was. He was very romantic. He brought me a bouquet of balloons, and not just any bouquet of balloons, but he had me pop the balloons, and as I popped the balloons, lingerie fell out of each one of those balloons, right? Who does that, right? He was coming after me and coming after me hard, and it was working. It was working. And so we got into our relationship, and we had a really good time. We went to concerts together. We went on trips together. The problem was that there was no room for this little girl that I had. He was more interested in me than he was my daughter. But it wasn't apparent to me at the time that I had pushed her aside because it was filling my cup. And pretty soon, once again, I became pregnant. And he did not want me to have that child. He wanted it to just be the two of us together. But I insisted that I give birth to another little girl, our sweet daughter, Kyla. And she was born. And we got on with the business of living. And pretty soon after she was born, within that first couple of months, I had taken leave from my job. And he had taken leave from his job to be home to raise what I thought we were going to do is raise a family together in those months of family leave. And that's when the drinking really began. He began to drink more and more and more every day, and the abuse came. And he was a very, very happy drunk and a very angry sober man. He was violent, and at about 8 weeks, I had gone to see my OBGYN, and he said, Wendy, you've got to leave. You've got to get out of that relationship. It's dangerous. It's not a safe place for you to be. Go home and pack a bag. And I went home and put all these things in a trash sack and put them in my trunk so that I was ready to leave when things got really nasty again. And sure enough, the time came for us to leave. And so I put those girls in the car and we left. He reached out to my dad. And my parents had no idea what was going on in the relationship. He reached out to my father. And a few days later, my dad called and said, Wendy, I think you need to give him an opportunity to be a father. This was my dad telling me, you need to go back. You need to give him a chance to be a father. He's made an agreement with me that he's going to get into counseling and things are going to be better. And I went back. And off we were. And within a few months, we'd gone to counseling. We started seeing a counselor. But again, the drinking began. We were in Chino at that time. We moved to Rancho Cucamonga together. We bought a house. We started a life together. And it was a tumultuous life. The anger that was focused in our home was on my oldest daughter, Alyssa. She would do something that he did or didn't like, and his anger would come up, and then Mama Bear would get in the way. And that was the dance that we did for several years because I was the protector. But I wasn't willing to leave again because I fought so hard for us to have the life that I really wanted. I wanted to be a mother. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have what my parents had. But it wasn't happening in our home. So at about when Kyla was 4, Alyssa was 11, I had gotten back into counseling. I hadn't found my way to the rooms. And, you know, many times in my journey, I've recognized that I wish I would have found my way here a lot sooner. But it wasn't my time yet. I went to counseling. The counselor said the same thing. You need to leave the relationship. And so what did I do? I found an apartment. I went and got the utilities turned on, and it was so violent, and I was so afraid to let him know that I had a little binder that I hid underneath my front seat of my car because I didn't want him to know that we were leaving. And so the time came for us to leave that day. I made all the plans. I had two girlfriends of mine, two colleagues of mine from work coming to help me pack up the house, and he left for work, and it was the evac call that came in, and my girlfriends came, and the U-Haul pulled up, and we loaded up the whole entire house, the girls, and my stuff in the kitchen, everything that needed to go that day. And my sweet girlfriend, Pat, who had come to help me, had grown up in a house of alcoholism. She was a very dear friend of mine whose father was a very violent alcoholic. And she had shared with me that she had gone through the abuse of him pulling her up and down the stairs by the back of her hair as a child growing up. That day she came to pack my daughter's room, she sobbed the whole entire time because it gave her something that her mother never had the courage to do, and that was walk away from the alcoholic. And she embraced me at the end of that day and said, God be with you, because I was doing for my girls what her mom had not done for her. And we left that home and got to our apartment, and I will never forget the feeling I had that night when I went to bed. It wasn't glorious, it wasn't happy. I was so afraid that he was going to take his life, that he was gonna come home, that the house was gonna be empty, and that something really bad was gonna happen. I loved him. I loved my alcoholic, but I knew that I couldn't stay in that situation any longer. It was a really tough time for us as a family. And by God's grace, that's not what happened that night. And I didn't see him again for a few months until we were at court because I had filed for custody. And I showed up at that courthouse, and there he was. And he walked over to me and said, can we talk? The attorneys went into court, and they handled the court case. And I said, I'm not ready. And he said, I've gone to AA. I've gotten a sponsor. I didn't even know what AA was. I didn't grow up in a house of alcoholism. I didn't really know about AA or Al-Anon. I had no idea. But I knew that he was willing to make a change in his life because he loved us and he wanted us back in his life. And so as the months went on, he went to his program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the girls and I got on with living. And I joined a church, a local church. I fell in love with the God that I believe in today, and I reignited my spiritual passion for God. And that was my foundation, that I knew that if God was in my life and that if I had prayer, everything was going to be just fine. I knew that I could find my path if I had God by my side. And so the years went on. We stayed separated for 3 years. He did his deal and I did my deal. He came along with us to church, which I was really happy about. And I tried to convince him that he needed to get into a men's group study and a Bible study, all the stuff that we do, you know. I didn't realize that there I was managing, mothering, and manipulating, all those things that I had no clue about until I got into the rooms. And so at year 3, things seemed to be going on a really good path. We were doing the deal, and he proposed. Now, we'd been in a relationship for quite some time by now, and he bought me the most gorgeous, most beautiful diamond, and I was shocked. I was stunned. It's a beautiful ring. But when we got back together, it became that the ring was more beautiful than the relationship. And I realized it. We'd been living back together for a year, and he was hiding his drinking from me. He'd gone back to drinking. And once again, I was left with a choice. Once again, I packed up the girls and we moved out. Again and again and again. My dear friend, Mallory, was such a good friend of mine, and she took me by the arm and she said, Wendy, I'd like you to come to an Al-Anon meeting with me. And I thought, what is that all about? What is Al-Anon about? And she said, just come and see. I finally made my way to the rooms. I walked into a Tuesday night meeting in Upland, and I heard the words, I heard them say, we welcome you to the Tuesday night family group changing format meeting. We who have lived with the problem of alcoholism understand as few others can. We too were lonely and frustrated. The hair on my arms, as it does right now, it stands on end. I had never heard that in my entire life. There were so many of you out there that were living my life, that had suffered from the effects of alcoholism. The tears just started to flow down my face. I just started to cry, and I thought, I found my people. I found where I belong. At that very first meeting, at the end of the meeting, I heard someone share, a woman share. She shared a lovely share, and at the end of her share, she said these words, don't leave before the miracle happens. That's what I heard her say. Well, in my mind, I kind of thought, don't leave before the miracle happens. Okay, the miracle is his sobriety. He's going to get sober. The miracle is that our relationship's going to work out and things are going to be really great. all these things were going on in my head. I had no idea that the miracle that would happen would be with me in my life. I had no idea. I just knew that I was in the right place, and you guys spoke my language, and I identified so much with what was being said in the room, so much with the shares that were being shared. It was home to me. I came and went, and I came and I went, but I was working full time. At the same time, my sweet Kyla, our daughter in common, was diagnosed with a very serious heart condition. She was born with congenital ptosis, which means one of her eyelids didn't form correctly, and she had gone for her second surgery to Jules Stein UCLA. And when she went in for surgery, they couldn't perform the surgery because her little heart was beating so fast and they couldn't calm it down with medication. So they sent us to Ronald Reagan. They did an echocardiogram. They set us down and said, we want to do heart surgery on your daughter tomorrow. And we were like, what is happening? You know, it just came out of nowhere. My insurance, fortunately, said, put the brakes on. They sent us home and put her on a Holter monitor. Come to find out, she was in tachycardia 80% of the day. Her little heart was just beating. And we had no idea. And I was super upset because we couldn't have the surgery. And one of my colleagues at work said, Wendy, go to Loma Linda and get a second opinion. And so out to Loma Linda we went. And I met, I have his permission to say this, Dr. Robbie Mandapati, who's now become a good friend of ours. We went into his office. He put her on the EKG machine and immediately admitted her to ICU. She went right up to ICU. And they scheduled her for her first surgery. She went for that surgery and it was unsuccessful. And so they started her on a rash of medication. She was about 10 years old at this time, amiodarone and flecainide and huge medication. She was taking huge medication. And we were told to go home and get on with the business of living, that there would be another surgery scheduled, and we would wait for that surgery to come. I thought for sure this would be his moment to get sober. I thought for sure this little girl, and I'm going to tell you one thing that I forgot to say. When I left that first time, when Kyla was 4 years old, we were driving down the street, and she said, Mom, I don't understand why we can't go home. And I said, honey, your dad drinks too much, and it's not a safe place for us to be. And that sweet little girl said, let's hide all the glasses, Mom. She loved her papa. She loved her papa, and she did not know what this was going to look like. But she knew that she loved that man in her life. That was her dad. And so I thought for sure that this illness for my sweet girl was going to be what? The pivotal moment for him to get sober, right? So we got on with living. And my older daughter, Alyssa, had since moved away to Las Vegas to live her life. And he was going to AA, and I was going to Al-Anon, and it felt like things were going to be right for once. You know, we were going to be together again, and we were going to be a family. And in his same old fashion that he does, he took me out for my birthday, and the girls were there. We went to Legends, if any of you know the local area, and we had lunch at Legends for my birthday. And here he came with this big banana split with all the whipped cream and everything on it for me for my birthday. And right there in Legends, he got down on one knee and proposed. And everybody was clapping and cheering, and you know, and there was this big, beautiful diamond. And I said, yes, you know, let's get married. Let's do the deal. It was what I had wanted my whole life. I wanted to be a wife and a mother. I wanted to have a house. I wanted us to be a family. I wanted us to be together. I wanted that hole that was deep within inside me to be filled finally. And so we got married. Several of you here today were at our wedding, you know. But again, it wasn't too long. The drinking started again. And now I was married. That meant for me, as a Christian woman, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stick this out. I've made a covenant to this man, and I'm going to hang in there. We're going to figure this out. I'm going to help you figure out how to stop drinking. Right? Right? Yeah. What I didn't know was that it was none of my business. What I didn't know was that I needed to be on my knees more than I was running my mouth. That I needed to be praying for him. That I needed to be giving him over to the God of his own understanding, and for me to work my program, and for him to get sober and work his own program. It took us a long time to get there. It took us a really long time to get there. But what happened next was that we had been living our life. I was working, alcoholism. The police had been called. We were doing the deal. It had gotten really crazy. Our older daughter had broken up from a relationship in Las Vegas, and she had come home. And she had come home to that same home that she grew up in. Once again, the same home she grew up in. I had gone to work. I was working an evening shift. And I always knew when I came home and he was up face down in the bed that he was passed out. I always knew it. And I came home late that evening from work and the girls were in doing their thing and I walked in and there he was, face down. So I went to bed. I didn't have a choice. I just went to bed. In the middle of the night, he got up to use the bathroom. And we had just had our master bathroom remodeled. And there was a large thud in the bathroom. Now, this is not the first time he had fallen. He'd fallen before. And I know many of you can identify with this. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to check on him. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I did not want to check on him. I was kind of praying that he was dead, honestly, and that I could get on with life. And my older daughter came out of the room, and she said, "Mom, what was that?" And I said, "Dad fell." And she said, "Aren't you going to check on him?" And I said, "Yes, honey, I'm going to get up and check on him." I got up and walked in the bathroom, and it looked like a crime scene. There was blood profusely spurting from the top of his head, and it was covered all over the bathroom. I grabbed a towel, I put it to his head, and carried his body to the bed, and he laid on the bed gurgling. He was highly intoxicated, and there stood our grown daughter screaming in horror at their father with this huge laceration on the top of his head. I called 911, and they came to pick him up, and I remember them coming in and just saying he had massive head trauma. And I said, "Where are you taking him?" "Do not take him." And I said, "The place where I work," because I did not want him to go to my hospital where I work because of the embarrassment. I didn't want people to know our business, and I had kept it very secret. And so they drove him out to Arrowhead. You know, and I followed and got out to Arrowhead, and then the girls followed afterwards. And he had a huge laceration in the top of his head, 33 staples he had to have in his head. And the ER doc said, "He's very lucky to be alive." You know, let alone his blood alcohol content was very high. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 times the legal limit, but he was very intoxicated. And so I left and went home, and neither of our daughters said a word to me. Neither of them said a word to me. The next day, I drove back to the ER to pick him up. We drove home in silence, and he slept it off. And the following day, our daughters came downstairs, and they said, "We want to talk to you." We never talked about alcoholism in our home. We never talked about what had happened the night before, the week before, the month before. We never talked about it. And here are these two girls. And my older daughter put her finger out and said, "We're sick and tired of this," to my husband. "We're not going to put it up with it anymore." And then she pointed her finger at me and she said, "We're sick and tired of you and this, and we're not going to put up with it anymore." We had both been doing a dance of dysfunction for so long, and our girls were sick and tired of it. And our older daughter, Alyssa, said, "I am taking Kyla and we are moving out." They were leaving. They'd had enough. And it was a pivotal moment for me that I had sacrificed these two girls to stay in this relationship. It was very painful. And he said once again, "I'll go to AA and get help," but they didn't believe him. He'd said it way too many times. They called a family friend, and we had a family meeting, and he went to AA. And man, that next day, I went to Al-Anon. I went back to the rooms of Al-Anon. It takes what it takes. It takes what it takes, and it took a frickin' lot for us to find our way to the rooms. But we had finally arrived once again. He worked hard at his program, and I worked hard at my program. I found a spiritual mentor who'd worked the steps, and I met with her weekly, and we worked hard at the steps. I did a ton of writing, and I was coming home. I had little pieces of paper in my pockets, my lab coat, and I would come home, put on the paper, and he would say, "What is that?" And I would say, "I'm just having all this spiritual awakening, all these things I'm remembering, I've got to get it written down." And he said, "You're going to get well before me," because I was working really freaking hard. I wanted so bad what you guys had. I saw the freedom that came from working the steps. I saw the freedom that came in the laughter in the rooms and people who had really gotten serious about working their recovery. You know, I know now, but I didn't know it then, that we're the lucky ones. We're the ones that get to show up in the rooms and really take a look at ourselves. And for the first time in my life, I got to look at Wendy. I got to look at what was motivating me to stay in this relationship, what deep hole I needed filled, the amends that I needed to make. And that amends, first and foremost, started with God and myself. You know, I didn't know that before I got here. I didn't know any of that. But I got to learn it in the rooms of Al-Anon. And I worked with her very diligently to work my steps. And I got well, and he got well. And slowly but surely, we got well. You know, we had this saying in our home, if you ever ask my husband what his favorite dessert is, he will tell you frosting. That frosting is his favorite dessert. He would get a piece of cake, and he would scrape off the frosting, and he would eat the cake and leave the frosting for dessert. That's the way he does it. Well, it occurred to me that we were really good at the frosting, that we were really good at intimacy and having fun and going to concerts. But when it got down to the business of life and communication and raising these girls, we had no tools. We didn't have a cake together, but we started to learn how to make a cake together. We started to learn in the rooms what we needed to do to have a successful life together. We started to learn to pray together, to go to church together, to be more in each other's lives, to have conversation together. And he worked at it, and I worked at it, and it was a beautiful union. And not too many years later, I knew that I needed to get a new sponsor, and I had been going to a meeting in Pomona. And I was praying for a sponsor to come along. And I heard this woman come and share in the rooms. And I knew that she was the woman that was supposed to be my sponsor. She worked a damn good program. She worked a really good spiritual program, and I was a spiritually wired woman. And I need somebody that I identified with that had a very strong prayer life. And she shared with me her prayer life and shared with the room. And so one day I got up the courage to ask her, will you please be my sponsor? And she said, you pray about it and I'll pray about it. But yes, I would love to sponsor you. I did not know it that day, but it was the same exact woman that I had heard at that first meeting that said, don't leave before the miracle happens. That was God in my life. That was God speaking very clearly to me in my life that was who was supposed to sponsor me. And she's been a phenomenal sponsor. She's led me through many books of working. We work together every week with our group and working through the steps and the concepts and the traditions. It's been a joyous ride. And she's heard my tears. She's heard my sorrow. She's heard my story. She knows my story. And we've grown together. And I love her very deeply. If you don't have a sponsor, get a frickin' sponsor. Work your steps and get a sponsor. So as he worked his program, I worked my program. It came to the point where he made a decision. He had managed to, he was such a high-functioning alcoholic, keep his job for 37 years. 37 years he stayed at the same job. And he had made a decision that he was going to retire. And he retired from work and started riding his bike every day. And he was living his life in the freedom of recovery. He was the happiest I had ever seen him in our more than 20 years of relationship. He was sober. He was going to meetings. I was going to work. Our girls had got on with living, and by God's grace, they stayed in our life. They stayed around long enough to let us show them that we were going to make an amends, that we were going to take ownership for the wreckage of our past, and that we were going to try really hard to live a good life and to give them, you know, give them a daily amends. That was one thing that was really important to me that I kept reminding myself, Wendy, don't forget, don't forget. You know, as I was preparing to speak and things were coming up for me, I hadn't thought about a lot of this for a really long time, because it's what we learn to do. We learn to get on with the business of living in Al-Anon, you know, and all of this kind of becomes our story of the past, and we live in the present day. And I have to admit to you, I became a little resentful in the midst of it. It was very painful for me to start recalling. And my good friend Kay, there you are, I had shared in a meeting, you know, that I was having a little bit of a difficult time because I was that was some, excuse my language, painful crap. You know, we had gone through so many things, but we had finally arrived. And Kay graciously reminded me, Wendy, you get to briefly share your past and your story, but live in today. You know, she was such a sweet friend of mine to remind me of that. Mm-hmm. And so as we went on our journey, he was riding his bike and going and doing the deal. And we had gone to a Rams, LA Rams, Chicago Bears. We're Chicago Bears fans, by the way. we had gone to a Rams-Bears game. And we were walking into the stadium, and I twisted my ankle and broke my foot. And I broke my foot in two places. And I had to be off work. I couldn't go to work, and I had a cast, and I didn't have a cast, and I had a cast, and I don't sit still very easily. But I learned to sit still in those months. I learned that I had a love for painting. I never knew that I was a painter. It was during COVID. COVID had just started, and I ordered all these really cool paint supplies on Amazon, and we started painting. I wanted to paint as a family, and he painted once, and then I painted a lot. But we got on with the business of living, and I was painting. It came down to the last 2 weeks before I was supposed to go back to work. And we had been to an open AA meeting out in Glendora at Finkbeiner Park. You know, that's one of the great joys of being in the program, is that I've been encouraged to go to open AA meetings. And that's been a gift. And I haven't said it yet, but those of you that are in the room, that are in AA, thank you, that are in AA, I better hurry up. I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful for the program that you work. I'm grateful for the love that you showed my husband. I'm grateful for the path that you gave to him and befriended him and showed him his way through recovery. I broke my foot. I was ready to go back to work. We'd been to a speaker meeting the night before. I'd been upstairs sleeping. Went downstairs, and in the afternoon time, we were building our cake, sitting out on that patio watching the birds. And, you know, we were just living our life, loving each other. And all of a sudden, he said to me, "Head rush." And I looked over at him, and he was white. And I thought, "Dear God." I stood up in front of him. He went to stand up. I said, "Babe, don't stand up." And he fell back chin to chest, urinated and defecated all over. And I knew, by God's grace, it's on. It's on. I yelled to our sweet daughter upstairs, "Call 911. I think Dad's having a heart attack." I pulled his lifeless body down on top of me and laid him down on the ground and felt for a pulse, and there was no pulse. And I started CPR. Now, mind you, I've been in the healthcare field a long time, but I don't remember the last time I've never given CPR to a live person. But by God's grace, I knew exactly what to do in that moment, because divine inspiration, and you guys had taught me, when it's time, it's time. And God showed up for me in that moment, and I gave him many quick breaths, because all that went through my head was that he's not going to have enough oxygen to get to his brain. And then I was given chest compressions, and as I was over him, I was saying, "Come on, baby, breathe. Come on, baby, breathe." And I was breathing in his mouth and his lungs, and the first officer showed up, and he took over compressions as I gave breaths. And I was yelling, "Come on, baby, breathe." And a few minutes later, the paramedic showed up. And they took over compressions and breath, and he aspirated everywhere. And he was lifeless on the ground. And I just stood back from him, and I put my hands up over him, and I said, "God, you have taken us too far for this to be the end of our story. Bring life into my husband." For more than 10 minutes, he lay lifeless on that ground, no pulse. Our daughter was in the front yard on the ground screaming in horror, and I went out and I said, "Kyla, pray. Kyla, just pray. Kyla, pray." And pretty soon I heard someone yell, "Get the wife, we have a pulse." I went to that backyard, and they were loading him up on the gurney, and they took him to our local hospital. We got in the car and we followed, and my community of prayer warriors surrounded us. We were in the parking lot. We couldn't go inside. I couldn't be with him. Cardiac surgeon calls downstairs to talk to me. And I was so grateful that I could say to him, he asked for history, and I said, "He's a recovering alcoholic. He has 5 years sobriety." And he said, "He's profusely bleeding in his abdomen and his chest, and we cannot do surgery. He's got 3 cracked ribs and a pneumothorax. He had a hole in his lung. But we're sending him to get stable in ICU." He was on life support for 3 days. I went home and I called the hospital every couple of hours to check on him, and he coded many times during that first night. On that third day, he woke up and he wondered where he was, because the last thing he remembered, he didn't remember that we had been to an open AA speaker meeting the night before. It had kind of affected his memory, and so they put me on the screen so he could see me. And he said, "Who are you?" He said, I think he really knew who I was, but he was trying to get my goat, right? By God's grace, he made a full recovery. He had a he had what's called spontaneous coronary artery dissection. He didn't have a heart attack. He had a rip in one of his arteries. And subsequently, 4 out of 5 people who have that do not survive. He was very lucky to be alive. He was very lucky to have his memory. He had gone more than 15 minutes. You know, it's a miracle, miracle, miracle. I stand before you today knowing that when I walked into that room of Al-Anon and I heard that woman say, "Don't leave before the miracle happens." The miracle was God's presence in my life to get me in the rooms of Al-Anon, to get me to look at my part, to get me to look at my story, to get me to own up to my own crap, to make amends to those beautiful girls that we had. The miracle is that they're still in our lives today, and they adore us and love us, and they're part of our life, and we love them immensely, and we get to hold on to them and tell them often how much we love them. The miracle is for me today that that wonderful husband of mine is sober, that he has 8 years sobriety, and that I love him more today than I did on day one, that we have an amazing story together, that God took a mess, and he gave me a message to share today with you, that we were a mess, but he redeemed all of that, that he brought us here today so that we could share, I could share with you our story of the goodness and grace of God in our lives and the goodness and grace of Al-Anon and AA in these rooms. You know, we're the lucky ones. We're the ones. We're the ones that get to come in the room as I look out at you today and I see you and I know there's so many out there still suffering from the disease of alcoholism. But today I know my husband is sober. My husband is sober. Thank God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, that my husband is sober. Thank you, God, that I have a program that I can come to often, that I can share openly and honestly and tell you guys the truth. Nobody in the world knew my truth. I had kept that all. Not even my family didn't know my truth. They just knew we were a mess. They knew that we were wreaking havoc in these girls' lives, and it wasn't right. You know, but we got to get it right. We got to get together and make it right. We got to make a really great cake. You know? Thank you so much for letting me share.